Okay, Alexander, let's talk about the latest statements coming out of Turkey from Erdogan. He says that he has that the Turkish military in operations in Idlib, in Syria, they have managed to kill, I think, upwards of 2,500 Syrian troops, 137 tanks. And, well, according to Erdogan, the Turkish military is just dominating. They're doing absolutely incredible in Idlib. And they're pretty much destroying the Syrian army. That's coming out of Erdogan. I know that you have information that the reports on the ground and the facts are much different. Give us the story as to what's going on in Idlib and in Syria.
I'm afraid that Erdogan is losing touch with reality, because the situation in Syria itself is almost the diametric opposite of what he's saying. Now, what is true is that on Friday, directly after the airstrike, which killed 34 Turkish soldiers. In fact, I'm hearing reports that many more Turkish soldiers than that were killed, but, you know, that's not confirmed. But directly after that airstrike, his military launched a drone strike on various Syrian military positions. Now, the Syrians have a long-standing arrangement with the Russians, which the Syrians are not party to, but which they have honoured, whereby Turkish drones are allowed to operate over Idlib province for surveillance and observation purposes. This is part of the Sochi agreements, which were made in December 2018, which agreed that Turkey would basically administer a de-escalation zone in Idlib. And that was part of what the part of that agreement was, that they would be able to have surveillance drones there. What he actually did, rather what the Turkish military did, was that these drones, which carried out that surveillance, were armed, and they attacked various Syrian military convoys whilst the Syrians were unprepared and not undercover. And it seems a certain amount of Syrian military equipment was destroyed, and a number of Syrian soldiers were killed, not anywhere remotely up to the kind of numbers that Erdogan is saying, or indeed some of the numbers that I've been seeing in the media. I understand, and by the way, one of my sources for this is The Guardian, that the total number of Syrian soldiers killed has been by the Turkish military operation since it began is around 150. In other words, not 2,500. And that was, as I said, in the initial strike.
Since it began? Can you repeat
since
that?
It began.
Since it began.
Since it began.
Because Erdogan claims it was 2,500 in this one initial strike.
Yes. Well, it's not, as I said, more like 150. Now, what happened was that in the first day, as I said, directly after this drone strike, the Syrian military was caught off balance, and a big Turkish military convoy entered Idlib and was able to recover some ground that the Syrian army had captured. The Turks and their jihadi supporters were able to recapture, in particular, the important town of Sarakib, which lies at the junction of the M4 and M5 motorways, which link Aleppo with central Syria, and which the Syrian government has been trying to free. Now, what has happened, however, is that after that drone strike, the Syrian military have recovered. They've been re-equipped very extensively, it seems, by the Russians. They've been able to send air defense systems into Idlib, and they've gone back on the counteroffensive, and they've recaptured Sarakib, and apparently they've been pushing the jihadi forces in the south backwards also. So, in effect, Erdogan's forces gained a temporary advantage. I should add that they were also able to shoot down two Syrian aircraft. But since then, the military balance and military events have turned against him. And we now see al-Qaeda and the jihadis and the Turkish troops in Syria all in effect in retreat. So it's not actually turned out very well. And his claim that he's killed his military have killed 2,500 Turkish soldiers is just pure fantasy. I mean, it's just war propaganda of the most nonsensical sort. I think there are lots of people in Turkey who believe it, but nobody who's been following the actual events in Syria itself does. And I would add, by the way, that there are some people, maybe it's early days yet, some people who think that the entire Turkish military operation in Idlib is turning into a debacle, and in fact that the Al-Qaeda is now in full retreat, and the Turks and the jihadis are now in full retreat there. So, there is a lot of fog of war, but one can say definitely that there's not been 2,500 Syrian troops killed. And at the moment, the balance of military advantage is turning decisively, it seems, against the Turkish military and Erdogan in Idlib.
Yeah, I've learned over the years not to believe anything that Erdogan says. He's a master BSer.
He
Plain and
is.
simple, he's a master
Yes,
BSer.
he is. He is. He says all
And
sorts of things. He's very good at working his own base, his own base.
it's all
But
for
as
internal consumption.
it's all
It's
for
all for
internal,
domestic consumption, all this nonsense.
absolutely. One should not take it too seriously. In fact, one shouldn't really assume that anything Erdogan says on these issues is true. The one unanswered question is how much of this he believes himself, given that he's purged his own military after the attempted coup in 2016. Maybe they're afraid to tell him
Right, I
what's
want to get to
actually
that.
going on.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you mentioned it because I want to get to that. Two points. Number one, I've heard reports that he's been launching missile strikes. Turkey, Erdogan's been launching missile strikes from Turkish territory in an effort to try and bait Syria and Russia to somehow mess up and strike inside of Turkey so he could trigger Article 5. I've heard those reports. Are those true or not? That's question number one. And question number two is this has exposed the Turkish military is essentially being a very weak military. Outside of large numbers, in other words, a large troop count, they're really not well run at all. They're actually very, very weak. And it's exposed them as being very weak. Is that true or not true?
Right, let's start with the first. The first is absolutely true. There've been Turkish artillery strikes on Syrian positions carried out from within Turkey, and Turkish aircraft, F-16 fighters, have been launching missiles at Syrian aircraft from within Turkey itself. In fact, as I said, there were two Syrian aircraft, two Su-24 bombers shot down by the Turkish Air Force in that way on Friday. And there's been reports that yet another Syrian aircraft, an L-39 ground attack plane, has also been shot down in the same way. And you're absolutely right. He's trying to bait the Syrians and the Russians into launching counterstrikes on Turkish military positions within Turkey so that he can invoke Article 5. I mean, it's so transparent that, of course, the Russians and the Syrians understand it, and they're not going to do it. And then the reason they're not going to do it is they don't need to. Their army, the Syrian army, is once again advancing in Idlib. And the fact that it's able to advance in Idlib does expose the ineffectiveness of the Turkish military, because it's, as we've discussed in previous programs, much bigger than the Syrian military. It's far better equipped in many respects than the Syrian military. And of course, it has the backing of artillery of artillery and missile forces, and indeed Turkish aircraft located within Turkey itself, against which it is unwilling to counterstrike. And yet, despite all of these advantages, it is the Syrian army that is advancing and the Turkish army which is retreating. Now, that there have been problems with the Turkish military for some time was exposed, in fact, some years ago. I mean, there was a major Turkish attack on a town called Al-Bab, which was actually controlled by ISIS at that time. And the Turkish military were not only unable to capture Al-Bab, but they suffered numerous reverses there until they were actually bailed out by the Russians, who launched airstrikes on ISIS to assist them. So it's been a long-standing problem with the Turkish military, and part of it must be that many of the best Turkish officers were sacked after the 2016 coup, and the people who have been put in charge are people who are actually less effective, but who Erdogan trusts and who are loyal to him, but who at the same time will probably carry out orders from Erdogan, which have little military logic, and also, perhaps more importantly, will be reluctant to report back to Erdogan problems that they're experiencing on the ground, which of course increases Erdogan's detachment from reality.
Exactly. You're starting to see the effects of that purge from after the coup
Yes.
be exposed. You really are starting to see that on the ground.
Yes. I would add also that this drone strike that he carried out on Friday, what has been happening is, of course, the Syrians have now been systematically shooting down Turkish drones over Syria. So, which beforehand Erdogan was allowed to operate there, the Turks were able to operate there. So that's going to lose the Turkish military its ability to carry out, real-time surveillance of Idlib, of what's going on in Idlib, which is going to increase their lack of understanding of what's happening on the actual battlefield and their sense of detachment even further. And you're absolutely right. It is exposing the damage that was done to the Turkish military as a result of the coup. I should make things very clear also. I mean, the Turkish people will fight to defend Turkey. The extent to which Turkish soldiers, many of whom are conscripts, are willing to die on an adventure in northwest Syria, which is part of Erdogan's, neo-Ottoman foreign policy. Well, that's a completely different thing. I suspect that a lot of Turkish people will not look favorably on this adventure either.
It's incredible how Syria has exposed the holes of the Turkish military. On the flip side, it's exposed the strengths and the effectiveness of the Russian military and the way they operate. And now you're going to have Erdogan running to Moscow, tail between his legs, fully exposed, blackmailing the Europeans with migrant flows into Greece and Bulgaria. The Europeans so far holding strong. Angela Merkel is toothless. She can't run to Ankara and pay Erdogan off anymore because she's going to collapse if she does that. You have the Austrian Chancellor Kurz also telling Erdogan, we're not going to buy into this anymore. What is Russia going to do, Alexander?
Right, let's unpack those things. Firstly, about the Russian military. Well, the Russian military is a superpower military. It operates at a completely different level of military proficiency and technological superiority to the Turkish. The only military in Europe or Western Asia that can compare with it is the US military. I mean, that's it. Outmatches the Turkish military at absolutely every level. The two are simply not to be compared. So that's the first thing to say. The second is that Erdogan's maneuvers with the Europeans, his attempts to flood Europe with refugees in order to gain leverage over the Europeans, so as to gain European support to put pressure on the Russians. I think that has backfired horribly. I mean, we've seen what Sebastian Kurz, the Austrian Chancellor, has said, in which he's savagely attacked Erdogan. We've seen also, I understand that Merkel, in a very soft way, because of course she's very embarrassed by this question, because of what she did in 2015, but she's also criticizing Erdogan. So instead of, gaining him leverage with the Europeans, what Erdogan has done is that he has infuriated them and isolated himself and Turkey even more. Erdogan's big advantage going to Moscow is not the Europeans, it's not even the Americans. The Pentagon has now made it absolutely clear. It's actually issued a statement saying that they will not provide air support for Turkey in Idlib province. I always said that they would not be prepared to go head to head with the Russians, face off with the Russians, certainly not on Turkey's behalf in any kind of situation in Syria. They've never done so on their own behalf, and they would certainly not do it on Erdogan's behalf. So they've ruled that out. So the only possible card Erdogan has to play with when he goes to Moscow is that he does have, and it's a well-known fact, it's not disputed, within the Turkish within the Russian government and within the Russian political system, some people who are known to be sympathetic to Turkey and who have had a long-standing project of courting Erdogan in order to draw Turkey into the Russian and Chinese orbit. And it's hardly a secret. We even know who these people are. I mean, one of the people who's often discussed and spoken of in this fashion is Dmitry Peskov, who is Vladimir Putin's press spokesman, but who actually is more than just a spokesman. He actually runs the Kremlin's entire information operation and is quite an influential advisor. He was a diplomat posted to Turkey and speaks Turkish and apparently likes the country and is known to have pro-Turkish sentiments. Another person who's sometimes spoken about in the similar way is Sergei Shoigu, who is the defense minister, the Russian defense minister, a very important and influential man who is from the Russian Republic of Tuva, some of whose people are Turkish speaking and who speaks Turkish himself, and who's also believed to have some sympathies with Turkey. At least some people think he does. I would add that by contrast, the uniformed military, the general staff in Russia, led by General Valery Gerasimov, take a much harder line on Turkey and everything to do with Turkey. They apparently think that the Russian government has been altogether too soft on Turkey. So we have contrasting forces within Russia, but that there is a pro-Turkish faction, if we can put it like that, within the Russian government has for a long time been generally accepted and widely known. I think on this occasion, the Russians will stand firm because I think Erdogan has crossed their red lines. He promised them a year ago in Sochi that he would separate Al-Qaeda from the other supposedly moderate fighters in Idlib province. He never did. It's quite clear that he supports the people the Russians call terrorists, the Al-Qaeda and those sort of people in Idlib province. And he also gave undertakings in Sochi in 2018 that he would arrange for the two main highways linking central Syria to Aleppo, the M4 and M5 highways, to be unblocked. And that didn't happen either. And the one thing you must never do with Vladimir Putin, it's known that he takes it very badly, is make promises to him and not actually fulfill them or even try to fulfill them. So I think that this time the Russians will stand firm, and in fact they've given every indication of doing so. Now, what does stand firm mean? I think that the Syrian military operation has never been intended to drive all the jihadis out of the entirety of Idlib. I don't think they've ever planned, for example, to recapture Idlib city, which is the provincial capital. I think the purpose of this operation always was to regain control of the M4 and M45 highways and to drive the Al-Qaeda forces further away from Latakia province, where the Russians have their big base, and which has been the subject of repeated drone and missile attacks from Idlib. So I think it is, this operation has always had fairly limited objectives. And I think that the Russians are not prepared, are not willing at the moment to cut off Erdogan totally. So I think that they will be prepared to offer him some things, but I don't think that there's going to be any return to the original Sochi lines, which is what Erdogan has been talking about. The rumors are that even before the present fighting began, the Russians were offering Erdogan a buffer zone, what they call a buffer zone, around the Turkish border, the Turkish-Syrian border, within Idlib province, which would be around 16 kilometers deep, and that Erdogan rejected it. And I expect the Russians will stick to that. Incidentally, I want to just clarify one thing. There's Erdogan made this famous comment that he said to Putin, just, get out of our way and we will fight the Assad regime by ourselves. I think what probably happened was that over the course of this furious conversation, I mean, there was clearly a major row when the two men spoke, which was on Thursday. Putin almost certainly said to Erdogan, since you are not dealing with the terrorists in Idlib, let the Syrians deal with them. So you stand out of their way. You stand out of the way of the Syrian army. And you can just see an angry Erdogan riposting. Well, what should happen instead is that you Russians should stand aside and let us sort out the Syrians. Well, of course, that's never going to happen. And that was a nonsensical idea. And again, showing Erdogan talking in that way, it highlights how angry Putin has become. And at the same time, it highlights how, deluded in many ways Erdogan is also.
A final question, if you could answer this really quickly. Why doesn't Russia and Syria just take Idlib? Just get it over with.
Well, I perhaps they should,
Didn't
and
they
I
do the
know
same
I
with
think
Aleppo in a way? I mean, yeah, the media, the press was really, came out against them, and there was a lot of propaganda. Oh, what's Russia doing to Aleppo? This and that. But at the end of the day, they took it over. They cleared it of terrorists and jihadists, and that was that. And the media just went away, the bad press. Why don't they just do the same for Idlib?
I'm going to say straightforwardly, I think the reason, well, there's two reasons. Firstly, as I said, I think there are some residual people within Russia who are saying, well, let's not completely burn all our bridges with Turkey. We've invested heavily in this relationship. We supplied them with S-400 missiles. Lots of our people go to Turkey for their holidays. Turkish companies are involved in construction projects in Russia. We have, we buy tomatoes from them. We're building a nuclear power station there. We sorted out Turk Stream. Let's not put all that at risk. But I think over and above and beyond that, there is another factor, which is that the Syrian military is still relatively small. And I think it can't carry out an operation like this at one go. I mean, this has been the pattern of the Syrian war right from the moment the Russians first intervened there in 2015. The Syrian army, the Syrian military, has to move by small steps, because it doesn't have enough trained troops to carry out a sweeping operation that would take over the whole of this territory in one go. One particular challenge, I suspect, would be taking Idlib City. Remember, the people they'd be fighting would be Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is a deeply fanatical organization. It could potentially try to entrench itself in Idlib City, which is a fairly big place. It's not a small place like Sadakib is, for example. And the Syrian military cannot afford the kind of operations that we saw with the US carrying out and its Kurdish and Iraqi allies against ISIS in places like Raqqa and Mosul. It needs to be a lot stronger in order to get round to doing that. So what happens is that the Syrian military takes territory, consolidates, builds up its strength, and then moves forward again a little later. So I think that's probably why we will be seeing a pause. As I said, so there's a residual sympathy within Russia for Turkey on the part of some people, less and less, I think, Putin himself. And as I said, there's limitations on what the Syrian military can do. By the way, before I finish on Russia and Turkey, I mean, one indication about how angry Putin is that apparently, in fact, not apparently, definitely, he's only, I mean, he's never telephoned Erdogan. He's the only telephone conversations that have happened over the last 2 weeks have been when Erdogan has telephoned him. And on several occasions, apparently, Putin has refused calls. So that gives you some idea. And of course, Erdogan wanted to meet Putin, not in Russia, not in Moscow, but in Turkey, in Istanbul, with Merkel and Macron there. And Putin said a flat no, I'm not prepared to do that. You come to me in Moscow on my ground, I'm not going to yours. So again, that shows both how angry Putin is, and secondly, that it will be Putin who will be dictating the outcome here. So I don't think Russia will buckle, but I don't think that the Syria will get the whole of Idlib, because I don't think that was ever the plan, and I don't think that's within Syria's resources at the moment.
Okay, Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. Click on that subscribe button, hit that notifications bell, make sure to smash that like button, share the channel with everybody you know. That really helps us out a lot. Please go to PayPal, Patreon, and subscribe Star to donate to the channel as well. That also helps us out a lot. And go to the Durant shop, pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, awesome shirts, polos, V-necks, t-shirts, you name it. And I see that, Alexander, you have a Lavrov mug right
Indeed,
there.
sir. Indeed, sir. On a
What's
subject,
Lavrov up to
well, indeed,
with Erdogan in
well,
Syria?
Syria. Well, he will be there. He will be there in the discussions with Erdogan, hovering on at Putin's side. But as I said, Putin talks in, as we say, as diplomats like to say, a full and frank way with Erdogan, and that's, in other words, laying down the law with him. So Lavrov will be there. I would say actually that coming back to what we've been saying before, both in this program and in the other, the Russians did underestimate Erdogan. I think they thought that Erdogan would be a more reasonable person than he has turned out to be. And I think this has been a major disillusioning event for them. And possibly also for this man, because of course Lavrov is the consummate diplomat. What diplomats always try to do is build bridges. And I think what they've discovered is that building bridges with Erdogan is an incredibly difficult operation, because trying to hold Erdogan close is like holding a scorpion by the tail. It's a dangerous operation, to put it mildly. But nonetheless, Lavrov will be there. He will be giving Putin his counsel and his advice. We can be sure the Russian embassy in Ankara, working in very difficult conditions, apparently, under an awful lot of abuse, will be providing careful information to Lavrov, who will be providing it to Putin. And the reason we have Lavrov on our mugs is because he is the consummate foreign minister of our age. He is the greatest foreign minister around. That isn't just our opinion, that is the universal view. He is the person who, apparently, every diplomat, the ultimate test of a diplomat, is to survive an hour with Lavrov, one to one. So that gives you an idea of the kind of man we're talking about. So he graces one of our magic mugs. Our magic mugs are magical and amazing. They keep your tea and your coffee hot in the morning, as they're doing at this moment in time with my coffee. I'm drinking coffee this time because we're doing this video in the morning. And you see how well it balances and how light and strong it is. What I would add is I recently discovered that you can microwave your tea or coffee in these mugs. Not that I would ever advise it because it's horrible to do. The tea comes out disgusting and the coffee worse. And what it actually does is the body of the cup becomes hot and the tea and coffee inside becomes hot. But the handle amazingly remains cold. So you can handle your cup and it's still comfortable. You don't need gloves or aprons or anything like that to take your coffee out of the microwave after you've done it. That shows you what great mugs these are. And I would point out, I've had this mug now for roughly a year. Not a crack, not a chip, no discoloration. It's as good as new. So these are fantastic mugs, like everything else in our shop is fantastic. Like this amazing polo shirt I'm wearing is fantastic. They're beautifully made, they're phenomenally comfortable, they're 100% cotton. They're remarkably stylish. You can wear them in all sorts of places. I've worn them in stately homes, on the ski slopes, at the après-ski, in all kinds of weathers, and in all kinds of social settings. And they are the perfect wear in all those situations. So you can buy our polo shirts. You can also buy our other equally amazingly well 100 made 100% cotton shirts. We've got long-sleeved t-shirts, short-sleeved t-shirts. We've also got V-neck shirts. Many of them, as you can see, have the Durand logo on them. And you can find other great things in our shop. You can find hats, hoodies, and stickers. And you can find our amazing ebooks on subjects like Brexit and Ukraine Gate and Russia Gate and Epstein. They're all there in our shop. And as Alex rightly says, you support us by coming to our shop. We are facing great problems with YouTube, who demonetize our videos regularly and unsubscribe subscribers. So this is your way of showing up your support for us. And it's also the way of acquiring these great things. So come to the Durand, come to our shop, support us in this way, bring us these great things. Alex will tell you how to do it.
Just look in the description box down below for the link to the Durand shop, thedurandshop.com. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.